And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
Welcome, everybody, to Soccer 101. My name is Taylor Rockwell, and this week it's sort of a 201 episode of Soccer 101, I think, because we're discussing parachute payments, what they are, how they work, who gets them, and whether or not they are good or bad. Joining me is Graham Ruthven. Graham, have you gotten any $40 million payments because you, I don't know, like failed to mow your lawn in a timely manner? That's the comparison I'm drawing here.
Hello, Taylor Rockwell. Not recently. That tends not to be the punishment that I get for poorly mowing the lawn.
Yeah.
By the way, straight off the top, I love the term parachute payments. It sounds so whimsical, like
it
money
really
that just falls out of the sky. Don't you just hate it when you get smacked on the head by a wad of bills? happens all the time to teams that get relegated from the Premier League, apparently.
It's on the list of things that sound good but are not, like garnishing your wages. It's like, ooh, you're garnishing them. It's like, that's not what that means. And yeah, a parachute payment is like, oh, sweet. They're dropping in money. It's like, yes, because you are in crisis is basically how it works. So, Graham, let's start there. What exactly are parachute payments? A thing that people may have heard about, heard talked about, especially as we get towards the end of the season when we get into the relegation battle. But what are they?
So parachute payments and solidarity payments, which is part of this discussion, more on that a little bit later on, is something that is unique to English football as far as I can see. And it's basically a mechanism which sees relegated clubs from the Premier League receive a percentage of Premier League broadcasting revenue for a number of seasons after they are relegated. So the parachute payments are linked to teams that are relegated, and then you have solidarity payments which are paid from Premier League broadcast revenue to the rest of the EFL. That is a little bit more stable. So last year, I found some reporting from The Athletic that said each championship side received £5.19 million in solidarity money. I believe that is the same amount to every team. Parachute payments are payments that are only made to relegated teams from the Premier League. And I guess the purpose of these payments is kind of in the name, right? Parachute. They're designed to prevent, and we can talk about whether they achieve this intention, but they are designed to prevent relegated teams from crashing back to ground so hard that they like smash into a million pieces. English football is littered with cases of clubs that have spent beyond their means and then suffered real financial issues and then even sometimes suffered administration or liquidation, which results in the clubs disappearing entirely. So these payments are designed to prevent that from happening. That is the intention anyway.
And on the surface, that seems like a almost generous thing for the Premier League to do, that like for a club that wasn't good enough to stay in there, you could make the argument, well, then why are they continuing to make money off of a league in which they are no longer participating? And Graham, I think, as I said, that is the surface level reading, because to my understanding, there's much more going on and a lot of it has to do with the Premier League breaking away.
Yeah, absolutely. So these were brought in 2006, parachute payments, that is, were brought in 2006, 2007. Before that, there was some form of solidarity structure, but this was the first time that you had a specific mechanism for relegated teams. And in terms of why the Premier League would pay them, you're right, it can be traced back to that breakaway, the Premier League breaking away from the rest of the Football League to become the top flight in England in the early 90s. And while I couldn't find like a clear and concise answer on why the Premier League would pay these, make these payments, if I'm providing an analysis of why I think they make these payments, one reason is political. So the Premier League sits at the top of the pyramid. There is a competitive incentive, I guess, for them to ensure teams coming up from the lower divisions are good and able to offer something, unlike Sheffield United and Burnley this season. But there's a political balance to strike as a league that is sanctioned by the FA. And so these deals just keep everyone happy under that single umbrella and cooperative in the pyramid. And if we're looking at this story through a modern prism, through a 2024 prism, we also have the impending introduction of an independent regulator in English football, and we can come on to that a little bit later on, but this story is becoming more and more increasingly pertinent. The EFL clubs are trying to strike a new deal with the Premier League clubs. The government is getting involved. So, yeah, there's a political balance to strike, and this kind of just keeps everyone happy.
You ran through the numbers a little bit, but let's get back to that for a second as to how parachute payments actually work and which clubs get them. Because theoretically, am I correct in saying, Graham, that if things went, I would say, kind of disastrously, you could have 9 different clubs in the championship getting parachute payments at any season?
Yeah, I think that's correct. So you are eligible for parachute payments 3 seasons after your relegation. So for the first season, it is 55% of the amount that each Premier League team collects from broadcast revenue. Then it goes down to 45% in the second year, and then it's 20% in the year after that. So based on recent figures from last season, that would be worth £40 million, which is $5 million in the first year, £35 million, which is just over $43 million in the second season, and then £15 million, which is just under $19 million in the third. So there are a number of different caveats on top of that. So just to complicate matters further, if you spend just one season in the Premier League before being relegated, you would not receive the money over the next 2 years. It would just be that single year of parachute payments that you would receive. So that could be bad news for Luton if they go down this season. If you spend more than one season in the Premier League before going down, though, you get the payments over 3 years. Clubs that return to the Premier League within 3 years of being relegated do not receive their parachute payments beyond the point of them going up again. So Burnley, it would be an example of that. Recently went down from the Premier League. They will have received parachute payments for one season. Of course, they went immediately back up to the Premier League for this season, and this season they won't have received those parachute payments. So that is a flaw in Norwich City's and Watford's plan, I guess. That is a caveat. The weird thing is that the parachute payments come out of a total solidarity package of £100 million per season. So if you have teams that come back up to the Premier League quickly, then that money gets redistributed among the existing Premier League clubs. So essentially everyone in the Premier League is a Watford and Norwich City fan, because of those teams have a history of bouncing between the two divisions. I guess Burnley would be another one that have done that recently. Then if those teams do come back up to the Premier League, there is more money for the existing Premier League clubs. So it's a total £100 million package that is the kind of divvied up depending on how things fall.
Graham, I hope this will make sense to you. I'm going to present a perceived flaw with parachute payments, and then I'm wondering if you would then agree that maybe that flaw is a designed flaw of sorts. But okay. The kind of consistent criticism I see of parachute payments is that it basically creates an imbalance. It creates an automatic imbalance of the haves and have-nots, even if the haves in this situation are teams that have been relegated to a second division. But even looking at balances and budget sheets for this season, like your teams that are making the most money, that have the most positive revenues at this point, would be Leicester City and Southampton, pretty sizably. Watford would be in there. Norwich would be in there. Blackburn are in there. It's teams that have all been in the Premier League somewhat recently, maybe not in Blackburn's case, but with the other ones very recently. And so there's this idea then that if you have teams coming down from the Premier League, if they're able to hang on to a good number of their players, even if they have to reduce the wages or restructure contracts, you're basically getting a team that was potentially good enough to be in the Premier League or stay in the Premier League, but either had injuries or managerial problems or bloated squads that now they don't have. And then they're getting more money on top of that, that it basically closes out the system of sorts, exemplified by, I think, like maybe a year or two ago, it was like 8 of the last 11 teams or 12 teams to be automatically promoted were teams that had been relegated a season or two before. That is the flaw. My argument would be that that is intentional, to your point earlier, that you, if you're the Premier League, you want to make sure that the division below you is competitive. And I think you want to make sure that teams coming up are in a situation where they are able to kind of spend and be competitive and not be humiliated the way I think some teams might if they were coming out of the championship without the financial backing and the parachute payments. But I think it also means that you don't have those clubs going into complete free fall as they can't compete, or as they basically have to trim their budgets massively, that then you have clubs in basically financial free fall. We've seen that happen to a few different organizations over time. So my feeling is sort of like, it's a problem in that it does close the pool a little bit, but I also think they're sort of trying to do that to make sure that the teams that are coming up can be competitive and can further enhance the brand.
I think the Premier League and its member clubs would like to make that argument that intentionally they have designed it this way. I am not convinced that they were that smart when this first came in 2006, 2007. I found some reporting that essentially there was a lot of opposition to this from Premier League clubs because they want to keep their money for themselves. Yes, they like a competitive league. Do you know what they like more than that? More money for themselves. Yeah. So I think that is the argument they would make now, because there is a growing talking point about the loop that's been created between the Premier League and the Championship, which you sort of outlined. I think this is an interesting discussion, because I can imagine when they were brought in back in the mid-2000s, this probably was seen as a victory for the English football pyramid, in a sense. You had this giant behemoth league at the top of English football, but with quite a lot of money trickling down the pyramid, and that doesn't really happen in many other countries, or any other countries that I could find. And obviously we've had cases of clubs that have been sent on a downward financial trajectory by relegation from the Premier League: Sunderland, Bolton Wanderers, Wigan. But the fact of the matter is, we haven't had a relegated team from the Premier League gone completely bust, and we've had loads of teams that have gone bust in the EFL, but not one that's been in the Premier League recently. So I guess in that sense, it has achieved some of its objective. But yeah, you now have, you look at the Championship now, there's a divide, a clear divide in that division. If you look at the current top six teams in the Championship right now, five of them, so Leicester City, Leeds, Southampton, West Brom and Norwich, are still receiving parachute payments. Those clubs have the biggest wage bills in the league. They spend the most money because they have this Premier League trust fund behind them. So you have a scenario where the top end of the Championship is becoming more and more tedious. I remember the argument with the Championship 10 years ago was the Premier League might be where you find the quality, but in terms of drama and unpredictability, the Championship was the best league in England. I don't know if anyone really makes that argument anymore, because essentially it is just the clubs that have suffered relegation from the Premier League that are going for promotion the following season.
And I think there's also an idea that, like, well, you're getting this money, it doesn't mean you're using it wisely. And I think there are clubs, as you mentioned, who haven't been able to use it wisely and have gotten relegated again, or have stayed in sort of mid-table or lower-table mediocrity in the Championship or even lower. In my mind, a lot of those clubs are because they had existing issues, they had massive debts, they had ownership problems, they already had pretty complicated financial situations that are then certainly not enhanced by being relegated. And so if you are a club coming into the Championship £100 million in debt, as, say, Leeds were, you then, or maybe even more, those parachute payments might help, but they're certainly not, like, fully paying off that debt. And so you can then have, like, the same existing problems. To your point, Leeds, I think presently third, are doing okay with it. But I feel like the ones that have, like, fully mismanaged parachute payments are the ones that already had pretty sizable structural issues in place, because when you go to the Championship, you're going to be able to get maybe not a higher caliber of players, certainly, but you're going to be able to get players for cheaper than obviously you would in the Premier League. I think, like, Fulham smashed a record not too long ago, but that was like for like a £14 million player. And you do still get that. You do still get clubs in the Championship spending sizable amounts to bring in talents that will theoretically get them back into the Premier League or into the Premier League outright. But I think we don't often see teams get a parachute payment, spend it on one player, that player goes bust, and down they go. So I couldn't find any. Do any clubs tick that box for you that you could find?
Not really, no. When I think of clubs that have used parachute payments well and those that haven't, you do have some examples of clubs that have. They get the parachute payments in the Championship and they think, oh, happy days, there's our transfer budget sorted for this year to get us back up to the top flight. I think the clubs that use the parachute payments best are the ones that use that money to keep a core of players together, because they don't immediately have to sell them. So I think of Fulham a couple years ago, who were able to keep Alexander Mitrovic and Reem the Dream and a number of other players who then allowed them to consolidate in the Premier League after going up. I think Bournemouth did a similar something similar in that same season, where They had a core group of players that had been in the Premier League for a while. They maybe suffered a bad season. They kept that core group of players together. They went straight back up to the Premier League, and they've been able to consolidate themselves since going up there. I think the obvious example to maybe your point, Taylor, would be Sunderland, a club that used the money just to go out and sign. Remember the documentary, who was it? Will Grigg? They ended up paying like three times the initial asking price. They were paying... This isn't exactly fair to add to this category, to this list, but Jack Rodwell was on like £140,000 a week or something while just sitting in the physio room. So the point I'm making is they were not getting value for their money, for their giant parachute payments. And of course, they go down to League One. They were getting parachute payments worth, what was it I said, like 25 million, something around that mark, 20 million pounds. They were getting 20 million pounds in parachute payments while they were in the third tier of English football. And that in itself is a symbol of how badly run they were as a club.
Hey, better days now. They're in the promotion spots, right? Or no, they're just outside the playoffs, so we'll see what happens.
Yeah, they've gone through three managers this season, though, so it's not exactly a rosy picture at Sunderland.
It's not great. You talked about Fulham and Bournemouth in there. I would say another interesting way to handle your parachute payments is to basically not panic. And I think Burnley would be a very good example of this. I think Luton might end up being a very good example of this. But Burnley, when they first get promoted with Sean Dyche as manager, they're in the Premier League. They end up getting relegated again, and Sean Dyche is still their manager. They don't sack him. They don't make sizable changes. They go back down, and then they come right back up because they use those payments and their time in the Premier League to recognize, if we want to be a Premier League club, if we want to be able to stay at that level, we have to operate as such, and we have to have facilities that allow us to be at that level. So, to my understanding, Burnley used a pretty sizable chunk of those payments, not just on players, but on infrastructure improvements, on training ground improvements, on bringing in new medical facilities, and it allows them to operate at a higher tier, essentially, and bring in better talents, but also just be a more modern club. And I look at Luton, who are doing a similar thing, having gone to the Premier League, not yet been relegated, but building out the infrastructure, improving the stadium, and trying to basically operate as a Premier League club would, in the sense of, like, we have a lot of the, not even bells and whistles, but we're not, you know, walking through an apartment building to get into the stadium anymore, is the ideal example. So I think Burnley is one that I think is interesting, because though they are also at the same time sort of a yo-yo club, in that they got relegated with Sean Dyche, they went back up with Sean Dyche, they did then sack Sean Dyche and get relegated and then go back up under Vincent Kompany, and maybe they go back down. I don't know if I would put them in that category, though they might be deserving of it. I would certainly put somebody like Norwich in there. I don't understand how Norwich and Watford, for example, seem to consistently go up and then go right back down. And that is the other side of this, is that you can get those payments, build your squad, add more players when you go to the Premier League. It might not click. You sack your manager. That striker's misfiring and that midfielder's hurt and you go right back down. Now you have to kind of clear out the decks and get rid of some players and figure out how to make it work. And it feels like you can get caught in that cycle. And I think that's where we see the yo-yo clubs exist.
Yeah. Off on a slight tangent, Taylor. Watford, did you see who they hired as their new manager this week?
No.
Tom Cleverley. Have you ever felt so old in your life?
Oh, goodness. Is he at least like still, he's like young for a manager, right?
Oh, yeah, he's a young manager, but nonetheless, he is a manager now.
If you told me like 52-year-old Tom Cleverley, I would be very upset.
Yeah, but that just made me feel so old.
Yes.
I remember when he broke through as like this next young thing, it feels like yesterday. Anyway, he's a manager now.
Are there any other clubs you think have used them well, Graham, aside from the ones we've mentioned, or should we talk about what the future might look like for
parachute payments? Yeah, let's talk about the future,
okay?
Because I think that's interesting.
All right. What do you think the future looks like when it comes to parachute payments? It is often discussed that they're going to change the structure, they're going to abolish them, they're going to improve them. I feel like there's many, many different conversations. A lot of the times it feels like they're testing the water to see what is popular and what is not. What do you feel like could be the future?
Yeah, so parachute and solidarity payments, they're in the news at the moment. There have been discussions over a new deal. There was a recent meeting between the Premier League clubs, which ended with no agreement being reached on what would be passed down to the EFL. Dame Caroline Dinanaj, not someone that I have heard of, but apparently she is chair of the Culture, Media and Sport Committee in the UK. In the UK, it's a revolving cast at parliamentary level of who holds these positions, but anyway, she is in charge of that now. She accused the Premier League clubs of, quote, parking the bus, a nice Jose Mourinho-ism there. This is the quote from her: the longer this deadlock goes on, the more the stated commitment from Premier League clubs to striking a deal with the rest of the pyramid looks like nothing more than an empty promise. That's the quote from her earlier this week. So these discussions that are being had now, that are taking place now, they stem from the confirmation last month that a new independent regulator would be created in English football. And that comes from the Super League debacle, when the government said that it would create this independent regulator to safeguard English football. And as part of this overhaul, there was a promise to ensure more money would filter down the pyramid from the Premier League. So as I'm sure you remember, Taylor, everyone was very angry about the Super League proposal. And so this was a way to appease everyone. Look, we'll give you more money in the coming years. The number that has been mentioned is 900 million over 6 years. So what's that, like a 50% increase? But the Premier League clubs are stalling on striking this new deal. But there is a new agreement in the offing. It will happen at some point in the future. The Premier League clubs are kicking their heels, as they tend to do when the money has to be extracted from them. But yes, there will be a new deal at some point in the future. So that's great news for Watford, who will be able to hire and fire even more managers. Poor Tom Cleverley and all this getting caught up in the middle.
Forgive my being dense. How does the independent regulator and more money being sent down the pyramid relate to the Super League?
And because essentially the Super League was the story of the rich owners in the Premier League taking picking the ball up and taking away football for themselves, right? So the independent regulators too. I mean, there's a number of reasons the independent regulator has been brought in. Things like ticket prices, the way that fans are policed. There's a number of things there, but generally it's to take away the power from the clubs in making that kind of decision and give it to the independent regulator. And as I say, the more money that the EFL is going to receive is essentially just a peace offering after the Super League debacle to kind of make up for that. But being driven by the independent regulator who wants to see that happen.
Heard. But seen through another lens, couldn't that also be like, hey, we're bringing in the principal to impose discipline and give you more rules? And could that not lead to Premier League clubs being like, yeah, we're definitely breaking away now. We don't want to do any of this.
A breakaway from the breakaway.
Yes, exactly.
Well, I wouldn't rule it out, but I know Gary Neville has been pushing for this independent regulator very, very strongly because they see it as a way to bring English football under control. It could even lead to things like salary caps and bringing salary spending under control, but this is the first step in that kind of process.
All right, well, maybe we'll do a 101 on independent regulators. Maybe, but hopefully not. We'll end up doing another 101 about Super Leagues if they rear their ugly head yet again. Ugh. For now, Graham Ruthven, thank you for talking parachute payments with me today. I would invite you to go outside on your lawn and see if any large denominations have been dropped. If so, I feel like that has maybe more so like drug trafficking implications than anything else.
Yeah, thank you, Taylor Rockwell. Am I okay to pull the ripcords on this now?
Yep.
Okay, right, see you later. Bye-bye!
Bye-bye!
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code The Athletic and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.